Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, joined, as always, by Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how are we doing?
Better now that you're here. Better that I'm back with the Mad Scientist. Was jealous of your week off, but feels right to have you back. We're under 30 days. Do you realize that?
There's so much to do still.
I looked at a calendar and I was like, oh my gosh, we've hit that barrier. I'm pumped. We have a lot. No Ceilings is about to get cooking into overdrive, so shout out to the whole team. I know everyone's pretty pumped. We got some stuff cooking in the kitchen and things are gonna get a little crazy around here, but very excited to be talking with you. We're recording this right before the T-Wolves game. I'm hoping that your boys keep it rolling, keep it alive.
I mean, Wolves in seven, why not us, right? It was almost the closest sweep in NBA history, so we at least had that going for us. I'm just hoping for a good game, hoping for some fun. Got nothing to lose. It's been a roller coaster. Congrats on yet another finals appearance for your Celtics. Just really real gauntlet that you kind of had to slog through.
I mean, we've been kicking everybody's ass all year, so then we get to the playoffs and everyone's like, well, they weren't tested. Yes, I understand everyone was hurt, but this is the damn Boston Celtics this year. Shout out to Jaylen Brown for winning Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I thought that was a really cool moment. So, yeah, I'm excited. I need Porzingis healthy. I need everyone to battle up. I hope your T-Wolves just keep beating up the Mavs and, you know, It's a lengthy series, and why not the Wolves? Why not? Shock people? I mean, all it takes is one game at a time. So it's going to be fun if they could win tonight, because then people are really going to be like,
basketball's a crazy world. 20 in Dallas, but
you never know. You never know. Did I hear a rumor KG is going to be at the game tonight? It's a tough one to lose.
Just give him a jersey. Let him sit on the bench. Let's go. surely they can find minutes for him.
Come on.
But we're not here to talk about the Timberwolves. We're here to talk about the 2024 NBA draft early entry deadline that was yesterday. It came and passed. A lot of names staying in, withdrawing, going back to school, some surprises, some not so much surprises. Let's just kind of dive into it. We're going to start with some of the kind of bigger names that stayed in, and then we'll filter into guys who withdrew that kind of really stood out and surprised us. I think the biggest name that we got to start with is Johnny Furphy, the wing from Kansas, from Australia originally. Kind of came down to the wire last minute-ish in the late hours leading up to the deadline, officially announced that he was staying in. Kind of surprised me that this was as close as it seemed to be with him going up to the deadline. Where do you want to go with Furphy?
Yeah, big one. It's probably a bit more of a shocker than some might realize, just because of the intel and the buzz you got. Like, it seemed the closer it got to the deadline and the more you heard, you're like, man, he might go back. And then it was tough because I was also like, Kansas just had a heck of a portal run. They added a ton of talent. So I was like, how's that going to work? And obviously they're not going to complain if he wanted to go back or whatever. It's just been interesting to kind of hear his process, and it's not helping us with determining his range still. It's still one of the biggest names right now in terms of range. Each person you talk to has a different opinion, which is pretty much the whole story of most of these prospects. But I'm excited to see Furphy get in and stay in. I still think he's a great upside swing. And he's going to present some intriguing value, especially if you're a team that might have multiple first-round picks, or if you can acquire another first-round pick. I think Furphy would be the talent I'd want to get some reps. Maybe he's a G League guy that just you funnel down there and let the body fill out. But definitely was the one we were watching, because I was like, this could be the shocker if he goes back. But then he decided to stay in, and hey, all right, let's go.
Yeah, the kind of discourse with him recently has really surprised me. Whereas, I mean, back in January, where he was on an insane shooting streak, and he kind of came out of nowhere for a lot of people and just exploded towards the top of draft boards. And now he's like tainted, where no one really is that excited about him. And I know he kind of had a cool, you know, he cooled off down the stretch when he became the number one kind of scoring option for Kansas. But what, like, that's what you expect to happen, where you go from not on the scouting report at all to first or second. It's going to be a little tougher. And I think what continues to kind of get go understated is how quickly all of this has gone for him in this last calendar year, where it's not like he was this big time international recruit coming out of Australia, where, you know, he was at all these showcase events and stuff. He wasn't. He committed late to Kansas. He joined them. He was coming off the bench and getting inconsistent minutes for them for most, or for the first half of the year. And then through injuries and just lack of shooting and lack of scoring and lack of athleticism on the wing, he just kind of got thrust into the starting lineup and thrived. And then he immediately became their primary perimeter scoring option, and defenses adjusted to that. And that's a really hard adjustment. So he went from kind of a you know, he was known amongst inner draft circles, but widely, he wasn't a widely known recruit, to be some people having him top 10. And now people are like, he's not even a first rounder. It's like, what are we doing? It feels way too reactionary for how quickly all of this has gone. And it's not giving him, I don't think it's giving him the proper credit for how much upside there still is with his game.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, you know, it's one of those things where the stock has been really up and down. It was cooking really high in the middle of the year, and it wasn't difficult to see why. And then Kevin McCullough goes down, and Furphy got the kitchen sink thrown at him. And the problem with Furphy is, I think people are starting to not forget, but it's also like we're not remembering this type of player. Like, you go watch him, he was at, before this year, he was with the Center of Excellence in Australia, which is very good program for developing talent over there. And you watch some of those games, and I mean, he was guys throwing down on people. He's very athletic. He gets off the ground with that size, and then he's got a beautiful shot from outside. When he started buzzing in the offseason, in the summer, then all of a sudden he reclassifies, joins Kansas. Everyone's like, whoa. And then it seemed when he got to Kansas, everyone was like, hey, myself included, I was like, this is probably looking like a guy that maybe is the sophomore breakout candidate. He needs to fill out. He seemed like an exciting piece off the bench. Then they put him in the starting lineup. He looks fantastic. They start winning. They start cooking. And then, like I said, McCullough goes down. So I think teams are thinking he's probably a little bit more of a project. And there's probably the player thinking, I'm more ready to go right now. And teams are probably looking at him like, hey, but like, yes, you're 6'8 and can shoot a little bit, but you dealing with the strength and the physicality of the NBA. So I think there's probably a little bit of, you know, miscommunication with both sides right there, or misbelief. You know, NBA teams are thinking one way, the players thinking the other way. We'll see. But I still think this is the upside swing at some point in the draft that, like, yeah, I would be very patient, because you could have a very smart player with upside that checks a lot of boxes, like athletic, big leaper that can play off the ball and has good feel with a shot. Like, yeah, a lot of teams will want to invest in that.
Yeah, and just to kind of run through some of his synergy numbers real quick, because he did, he really cooled off down the stretch. You know, he couldn't really create his own shot, and that's fine. You know, I don't think, I think people trying to sell him as like an on-ball wing creator, it's just kind of miscasting him for what he's best at. I don't think that's who he is. But even with that cold stretch to close the season, and he's still ranked in the 94th percentile in overall points per possession, page loading, 98th percentile spotting up, 84th percentile in transition. It's just, he's not an on-ball guy, and that's okay. What he is, I still believe in the shot. I know it cooled off. I still think he's an awesome off-ball shooter. I'm still a little higher on the defense than most others. It wasn't good, I know that, but I think he has the tools and the desire to defend, especially the athleticism, the size. People continue to forget that he's like 6'8", 6'9", and an awesome rebounder. That stuff kind of translates. So as an off-ball shooter who's an awesome rebounder, I think that's a, those are two really, really good skills to build on going forward. And he's a freshman. He's young. There's a lot of rawness and the development and how quickly all of this has gone for him, I think is really important because it's been a lot. And it's not like he's grown up in the AAU system and, or had parents who were pros and, you know, used to all this stuff. He's kind of an under the radar international recruit who's got a lot of stuff to his game. And I think he's more than worthy of taking a swing on in the top 20. Where do you have him? Just curious.
I mean, myself, I've cooled him on him a little bit. I've got him at 27.
Okay.
I still like him. It's just, I think at this point I'm getting to an area in which I'm balancing with this class, especially I'm balancing like, hey, who offers a little bit more of a higher floor right away? Because I do think that's a good debate, inner debate when it comes to the draft and evaluating is you get to, okay, when does potential meet value or a higher floor? And in this draft, I get to a point where I start in the middle of my first round, I start swinging for guys that I think might not have the biggest upside, but they have the upside to contribute early on and be more of a rotation piece or an asset. Then you get to a point where all of a sudden you start bringing in that potential back. Some guys might lean heavy on upside and potential early, but I also think it depends on your situation, your fit. So Furphy's one of those guys also that I'm probably going to go back and rewatch some stuff because you go back and look at his numbers, like beginning of the year for most of it, he wasn't even getting 20 minutes a game. Then they insert him in the starting lineup and he has a 6-game stretch where he averaged 15-7 on 64-55, 69 from the free throw line. But like he was cooking, he was playing great. And, you know, we fascinate with a lot of these wings about like on ball creation. It's like Furphy is never going to be an on ball guy. He creates off the ball. He creates his offense away from the basket, cutting, floor awareness. So just one of those names that, you know, I'm kind of this part of the process every year. I feel like I get pretty blunt about like, okay, I'm moving him down. And then I kind of go, okay, maybe a little bit more back up. But, you know, you're starting to finally get to the home stretch of making your evaluations and stuff. And I still like Furphy. It's just if I was a team, I'd want to maybe get another first and then get that if I got my guy early or if I was patient and wanted to let this develop, absolutely, I'd go get Furphy. I still think he could go top 20 pretty easily.
And I still have him top 20. When you just kind of look, it's a wings league, and there aren't that many interesting wings in this class. And I think the shooting's real. I think the athleticism is very real. And I just think he can mold that into a really useful player. So The kind of intel with him recently has been fascinating, but we'll see. It'll be a really interesting kind of final month up until the draft for all these guys. All right, let's move on to kind of another surprising, I think one of the most surprising names who stayed in, shooting guard from Minnesota, Cam Christie. This one really shocked me.
That was my big first whoa of the day. I was like, okay. He's been buzzing. He's been the buzzing name, and I feel like it's really been cooking up. We're going to start getting into promise season. I'm not reporting anything. I'm not speculating anything. I'm just saying that feels like there's something, maybe there's something that's going to arise in the near future. I get it. That's the kind of guy you want to draft, with offensive tools, with good, you know, a good foundation to mold. Probably could say kind of in the same world as Furphy, although I just think Furphy off the ball is very underrated. So
yeah,
you got to see Christie in person. I mean, and I think you even texted me, you're like, man, Christie's nice. So do you get it? Is it teams trying to jump at something to stay right now because they're just wanting to get like, oh, like when Christie goes back, he's probably skyrocketing with another good year. So you could say that this is the pre-draft guy if you want to put it that way, but I try to stay away from that terminology as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, if he would have gone back, he would have gotten a pretty big NIL bag. If he transferred, he's kind of climbed into my top 40 just based on guys who have returned, and it's been the biggest surprise for me. I love his long-term upside. My big concern with him is that he's nowhere near physically ready for NBA physicality and NBA defenders. I think he has the frame to kind of put on muscle and to get stronger, a little similar to his brother. But I thought his brother was, he was taller. He had a bigger frame. So maybe he gets there, but if he doesn't go first round, if he doesn't have that guarantee or that promise of a, you know, of an actual contract that we typically see with guys who kind of go top 40, if he doesn't get that, I really, 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 really worry about how long he'll last and what types of opportunity he'll actually get, because it's so rare for guys who don't get that actual legitimate contract to get an actual opportunity and to have resources poured into them to develop them physically, to be patient with them and to really develop their game. He's an awesome shooter. First and foremost, one of the prettiest shooting strokes I've seen, especially in person. And I think he's going to be an awesome shooter. Spot up 69th percentile, pick and roll ball handler, 90th percentile on all jumpers, 84th percentile, 83rd percentile off the catch, 86th percentile off the bounce. And that's the big selling point with him. And he was really good at kind of being shifty and getting to his spots in the mid range and running off of screens and using that off ball movement to then create shots for himself. But then we look at the at rim stuff, and at the rim, he was in the 8th percentile and in the 9th percentile in at-rim shot frequency. So not only could he not finish there, he couldn't get there to begin with because he's not super explosive. He doesn't have a lightning quick first step, and he doesn't have the strength to finish through contact. So I really worry about physically about how much he's going to be held back or limited physically, because the strength just simply isn't there yet. And so frequently we understate the importance of that.
He's, you know, I always have a couple guys that I'm like, hey, prove that you're staying in before I very much focus on your film. And he's at the top of my list. Like, probably tonight I'm going to be turning on some Christie film. Is, you loved Max as a prospect.
Yeah.
I could not stop loving Max as a prospect. And I'm just guessing right now, because I've watched a little bit of Cam, but I'm not going to even try to be serious about it until next week. Are you saying, and we have our big words coming up soon, so I have to watch him. Are you saying maybe he's more of a rawer, not as good defender as Max?
Yeah, he's
more raw offensively.
His defense is nowhere near what Max was at Michigan State. I thought Max was an incredible defender at Michigan State, and that was one of the big selling points of them, because Max didn't even shoot it that well at Michigan State. The form was pretty.
The mechanics were gorgeous. Just never went in.
We believed that it would get there, and you know, he's still taking those strides. But the defense with him was why I had him like top 20. I think I had him like 15-ish that year. But yeah, Cam, isn't nearly the defender, and I think Max was had 2 to 3 inches on him as well. So when I saw him in person, I really liked the effort. I think the effort and the fundamentals were really sound. It's just he's not that strong, and he doesn't have tremendous length, and he doesn't have great positional size. It's solid positional size, but it's nothing shocking or outlier-y. The effort was there. The instincts were there. It improved throughout the year. The desire was there. And that's what you want to see with young guys, especially, you know, guys who are lesser in strength. And sorry to keep harping on that, but it's just kind of, it's a big part of the game. I do think he's a little more advanced offensively than Max was at this point. I think the shot is much more real and less theoretical than Max's was in college, and the kind of on ball creation, the pick and roll creation specifically, and some of the playmaking stuff that comes out of that is more advanced than Max was at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just saw Cam measured in at 6'4.5" without shoes. Max measured around 6'6" in shoes. So maybe they're in the same ballpark. And I still think Max is going to have a big year if the Lakers allowed him to play. I think he's going to take another step forward. Yeah, Christie's just become the wild card now. He's the one of like, okay, how high? How much are you falling in love? Because I do think he has the upside to be a really nice piece on the wing, but there's just a lot of time that's going to be required. So I wonder if he's going to be an early second round target of teams trying to get there. And maybe if he's on the board day two, we're getting some teams trying to trade back up to get him because they're like, hey, we got our guy in the first round. We're happy. Now let's get a little bit of a project with some upside. So I don't know. I could see him going first round this year. I could see a lot of guys going first round this year.
I
he's got to feel good or else he didn't stay in. He's got to be feeling good. That camp has to be feeling good.
He has to, because he didn't have the type of season where it's like, screw it, let's just get to the league. And he's not that type of athlete where it's like, screw it, let's just go figure it out. He's had to have at least enough feedback where it's like, yeah, we'll take you top 40 minimum.
There's too much breadcrumbs. I watch everyone's boards. There's too much breadcrumbs. I watch everyone's boards that I know why they rank players in certain spots, because it's not just their evaluation. And I've seen too much movement too quick. So that's telling me something. And then when, you know, next upcoming week, when I start asking around, I'm sure I'm going to get plenty of stuff that I'm gonna be like, okay, here we go. Right? So this is the fun time of the year. We love this.
Just real quick, where do you have Cam? I know you haven't done your
no, I have yet, him at 44. Okay. My problem is, and we're going to talk about this, is there's the depth of this class I thought took a little bit of a hit, and then you keep looking at those names, you're like, moving him in front of him? Like, there's a lot of guys in that range that I really like that just because I have them in my 40s doesn't mean I can't see them going 32nd. I'm excited to watch his film because I want to be like, ooh, okay. But that production sounds a little more raw. But like, I know when you sent me videos of him in warm, I was like, man, it's smooth. I was like, this looks like a very fun sophomore breakout. And then all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, we're here? So we'll see. But yeah, it wouldn't shock me if I keep moving him up. It's just there's a lot of names in front of him I like a lot.
Agreed.
Where do you have him? Where do you have him?
I have him at 37.
That's a good spot.
He's like really knocking on that door to move into that next tier of guys who I have at like the end of the first.
So. Yeah, for everyone listening, me and Metcalf talked before we hit record, and I said, I have a nightmare death row range of like 10 names in the second round that I'm like, I like the guy at the bottom of my list, and I can move him up to the front of the list. It's just very, very annoying right now. But that's this year. It's just wild.
Absolutely. Let's move on after this quick break.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
And we're back. Okay, so I think Furphy and Christie were the two big surprises who stayed in. And any other names that you kind of want to touch on that you were like, oh, interesting, or surprised by?
Jalen Wills a little bit. Another guy that I was like, you're going back. I'm not going to spend a night until 3 a.m. watching your film because you're going back. And now he's going to the draft. And I'm like, I guess I'm going to spend a night watching your film at 3 a.m. So a little bit, I know there's been some fans. I know No Ceilings, there's a lot of fans. I know there's a lot of intrigue. So I'm excited to watch him. I think him and Christie are at the top of my list of who to keep watching. Who else? What about you?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by Wells. He's kind of in the same boat where, you know, just need to do the deep dive now, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, it's just rude of these guys to make us do more work. It's exhausting. Jonathan Mobo was a name that people seemed to kind of be surprised by.
I thought he should have gone. I thought he had a fantastic year. The tough part is everyone was like, oh, he could go back. He could transfer. What? And it's like, well, if you transfer, you're going to be playing with more talent. You might not put up that production. I think he just had an outstanding year. And it's like, you got to ride the wave. And his combine showing after I saw him in those games, I was like, you got to be in. Because even if you're in the second round, he might be in a perfect spot in the second round because he's got a good set of versatility that teams are always looking for. Even though he's undersized, he's got good length. Just the skills he has at that position can find a way to be on a roster for a long time because you can do a lot of stuff on the court. So I wasn't too surprised. If anything, now I'm like, okay, are you maybe going to be buzzing a little bit more? Some of these workouts now that are going on, it's going to be fun to get those reviews, those reactions. Mm-hmm. I've already started to get some, and some stuff I've heard has been like, whoa, so it's going to be crazy going forward.
Trey Alexander stayed in. Were you surprised by that?
No. It just hurts me. Yeah, like I like him still. It just hurts me. I hope he proves me wrong. I like Trey still. I just also think that's going to be a guy that probably goes a little later. And I'm like, he's going to go to summer league, look good, go to the G League, look good, figure it out, end up on someone's roster, probably the Heat, ruin my life. I mean, were you?
A little bit. I've really cooled off on him, unfortunately. I think he's a really solid college player. I worry about the lack of athleticism and the lack of explosiveness and maybe it's just a symptom of if he's put into more of like a lesser role, put a little more off ball as like a second side creator and not as much on ball, then the effectiveness kind of ticks up a notch. But he really, really struggled to separate at all on offense this year.
He's going to need to find his thing. He's going to need to do a little Patrick Beverly mindset of like, what's going to keep me on a roster? What's going to get me on a roster and keep me around? If he wants to buy in to being a defender with his size, fantastic. He's just going to have a little bit of a shift because I still think he can do some stuff offensively, but I don't think he's going to be the guy. And maybe a lesser role, like you're saying, is perfect for the type of player he is. But yeah, it was tough because the year then you'd start seeing him kind of cook and I was like, oh, Trey's kind of getting back rolling again, and then you're like, so I don't know, at some point I'd still swing, at some point I would swing for sure because that's a good second round talent at least. And those guys are so fascinating to me when they don't have all the keys and when they're just like, hey, there's four guys that are better than you to start out, like figure it out. He might surprise people. What else?
I mean, we finally got the news of Bronny staying in, but we knew that was coming.
I think Shams shared that pretty early.
Yeah, and
so very aggressive.
Fascinating reports coming out about two-way, denying workouts, just really, really, really trying to control where he goes, which that's what an agent's supposed to do.
Everyone remember that what Metcalf just said. For some of the reports that are coming out, agents are paid to do some stuff in the next coming weeks. So just be careful with jumping to reactions. The agents are trying to do their jobs. I thought Bronny was the winner of the deadline, of the withdrawal deadline, because there's a lot of names that went back and it helps his case. But I have a diehard friend, Suns fan, shout out Neem. If they take him in the first round, he might literally quit basketball. And he's one of the biggest basketball sickos I've ever met in my life. I can't believe it if they do it.
It'll be malpractice, but
I hope they do it. I'll enjoy day two of the draft so much better.
Content-wise, it'd be incredible. But whatever. We did plenty on Bronny the other week. Okay. Let's move on to some of the names who withdrew. Where do you want to start?
Mark Sears. Should we have the Mark Sears hour?
Let's do it.
Saved a little bit of time saved a little bit of sanity for our future no ceilings war rooms. We don't have to have hour-long arguments about where Mark Sears goes. I was pretty pumped. I, you know, at first I was like, oh gosh, that's a big one. That's a shocker. And then I kept thinking about it. I was like, no, it's probably not because of his situation. He's going to go back and get everything to go back for Bama. He's going to be one of the best guards in the country. They're going to be studs. I get it. I get it. It's just, it's tough with those guys because they're older. Yes, he's undersized. He had an incredible year, numbers wise, film wise. He was fantastic. And now I'm like, hey, okay, you need to take a step forward and you're still undersized and there's a juggernaut of a class coming. So we'll see. He's going to need a lengthy tourney run and a year like he just had. And maybe he's going to buzz again. But that was a tough one because I was like, I get it. I understand. Go win a title. Go try to win one also. Get some money.
They're loaded.
So
there's no way everyone stays. I'm assuming some of these transfers are going to back out. But if they don't, I mean, holy crap.
I mean, they're going to
be. There's not going to be minutes.
There's going to be some bad dudes, though. So I don't know. I mean, it's wide open for them. They are going to be a beast. So I get it. I understand. It's just it was interesting. I also just thought he would be buzzing a little bit more throughout the pre-draft process, but I also get why it was a little quiet. So
I'm assuming, yeah, and he had a thigh injury.
Yep.
During the combine. He still played in one of the games. I thought he played pretty well. But when you're limited like that, it hurts. We saw, you know, last year with Bona, couldn't play. Couldn't do much of anything at the combine. Didn't help him. So when we look at Sears, where does he improve this year to help himself?
Grows 5 inches? I don't know. Like, it's easy to be like, oh, he should score more. He does everything for them. And he was crazy efficient. Like, I have a bunch of graphics coming out for No Ceilings for the draft of like stat tracking. And it's like, Mark Sears is in every damn category for the guards. Like, so he was like in the top five. And I just love how he plays. I don't think this is a guy that's going to be just a good college player. I think he's going to be able to play at the next level, despite his limitations physically. So I don't know. What about you? I mean, does he just need to shoot it better from deep?
I know how. He shot off the bounce, shot off the catch. I guess improve some of the at rim finishing stuff. And he's kind of middle of the road when we look at most of the point guards in this draft. So if he bumped that up a couple percentage points, that would be big. I know people were concerned about his lack of a kind of like a mid range game, but Alabama doesn't play that way, so he's never going to be able to improve that there. And given his size, I don't think it would ever really be part of his game. So the only things I can think of are, can he just kind of get incrementally better on defense? And can he get incrementally better around the rim? I thought the playmaking was really good all year. The shot making was absurd. The shooting versatility was awesome. I don't know how much else there is for him to kind of take that step up.
I think he could add some meat on the bones. Just to
continue to get stronger.
Just to kind of maybe dish out a little bit more punishment where it's coming to like getting in traffic. And if he could kind of develop that in the lane move where maybe it's like, you know, how Brunson's so good at that. I know everyone is tired of comparing him to Jalen Brunson, but Brunson's so good at using his body to also get you off. And now he's smaller than Brunson, so he's going to have to figure out how to really do that. But I mean, he just averaged 21-4-4 with 1.6 steals on 50-43-85. Like, what else am I going to ask of him to do? So he's going to have a year like that. He's just going to have to really kick ass, and they're going to have to go deep. But now I'm very excited to watch Bama because of him. Because he's going to be on my board next year. I still love how he plays the game. So
same. Someone else who is returning to a stacked team, Alex Caravan, kind of another one of the, for some, the biggest surprise. I thought this made a lot of sense for him. It seemed like he kind of kept floating around that 35 to 50-ish range. You know, little higher for most, but never really kind of breaking out of that late first ceiling. And if it's that, you know, maybe you get a guaranteed contract in the first round or top 40, or you go back to UConn and try to three-peat on another team that's looking really good and playing off ball with another sharpshooter like Liam McNeely. I get the temptation. Were you surprised by Caravan?
A little, yeah. I thought he was going to be a guy that teams were more excited about than evaluators, like fans, because I think when you watch his tape, you see how much of an impact he leaves without scoring. Like, he just did a lot of stuff for their team. I thought he was really important, even nights when he wasn't shooting the ball great. I was like, man, Caravan's playing great. Like, he's making an impact. And that's one of my favorite things is when guys don't have it cooking in one area, can you make an impact to other places? And I thought he was just fantastic for them all year. So a little bit, but I also think there's so much for him to gain by going back and kind of being more of a like, okay, Alex, it's your time to get cooking. And yes, they've got McNeely coming in. It's going to be really fun, dangerous duo together. But I think Caravan, at first it shocked me, and then I was like, this is the right call for you. Like, go back, be the guy, and really pack a punch next year offensively. And then, you know, I always think those versatile offensive wings or forwards that can shoot, I think if you can go back and have a good year, like, teams are always going to be desiring you because of your three-point shooting and how the game's translated. What about you?
I wasn't that surprised. I think that the shooting's very legit. I think he's a good rebounder, good team defender. But if he can kind of go back, improve a little more off the bounce in terms of like attacking closeouts, kind of be a little more versatile, getting to his spots in the mid-range, creating for others after attacking those closeouts, and get a little lighter on his feet, to just kind of, I don't think he's ever going to be an awesome on-ball defender. I don't think he's a bad one necessarily, but if he can just get a little more agile, continue to maximize that size and strength and just improve a little bit on ball, I think those two areas make him really more intriguing as kind of a wing forward-ish piece in the NBA. I would imagine entering next season, he's probably right around 30-ish on most boards if you average him out. So I think he has a lot to gain, and not really a ton to lose, if that makes sense.
Completely agree. What else do you got for returners?
Biggest surprise for me, Neek Clifford from Colorado State. Yeah. This one, shocked.
Yeah, I got that happened like after the buzzer, and it wasn't like a big name post. And then someone in the No Ceilings chat through it, and I like did a quadruple take at my phone. I was like, back? He's going back?
Yeah.
Just weird he didn't get more buzz this whole process. And like, I even talked to scouts, and they're like, I like Neek. Like, no one was ever like, hey, I'm in love with him. But there was people like, I really like him. He can play. I see a world. I see a value. Like, I talked to people that thought he's early second round guy. Like, well, you know, like kind of like someone you'd go target to get. And I get him going back. It's tough with the guys that transfer and have the big year because teams are like, is it just a favorable situation? So I think he's another one that has a lot to gain probably from another year of being of the guy. And I think his numbers could all take another boost. I don't care about his age. You know, I don't care if he's going back for another year. Like, he can just play. He's got what I want. He's a guy, he could go back and put some muscle on and really take a next step, because I think he was around like 190. If he got to that 200 range at 6'6", 6'7", he'll be a problem. He already is, but I was shocked, very shocked.
And he was one of the better wing defenders in this class. You know, took a jump with the shot. I thought he showed a lot of kind of versatility and really interesting stuff attacking closeouts, especially in that Virginia game in the tournament. I know we don't just rely on tournament games, but that stuff was sprinkled throughout the season, and then that game is just an overflow of that kind of stuff. So I don't know if NBA teams want to see more of that. If he sped up his release, you know, increase the volume from three, keep that similar efficiency, if not improve it. I think all that kind of stuff would help him next year. I've seen some people mention, you know, improve as a pick and roll operator, an on-ball creator. It's like, he's never going to be asked to do that stuff. I don't think that stuff matters for his NBA projection. It might help him in Colorado State next year in terms of college, but I don't think any of that is going to sway teams, because I would be shocked if anyone was ever looking at him as an on-ball creator, but as that 3-and-D type guy. Speed up the release, continue to attack closeouts a little more, get to your spots in the mid-range, get to the rim, continue creating for others. Then it's like, all right, now you're back in that first-round discussion. I kind of thought he was in that fringe first-round discussion anyways. I guess not, but that was really interesting.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think teams would have taken him into the first. They would have tried to sneak to get him. I think if he goes back next year and really, he's going to cook on working on that 3-point shot. And if it comes around on a consistent level, like higher volume, he's already got the defense ready to go. If the outside shot's consistent, then we're going to be talking about a really legit 3-and-D guy that you're targeting, with other tools. Like, I love his playmaking. So that's probably one of my favorite guys to keep an eye on for next year.
Agreed. Another big surprise, Jahmyr Watkins.
Yeah.
Did you think he was staying then?
I mean, talk about going down to the buzzer. I think it was literally like we even got like a post deadline. Hey, he did get it in. You know, he did get his requested to pull out of the draft from Gavoni. I was like, goodness. So, I'm a little surprised. He said transferring too, correct? Portal?
Yes. Yeah. Portal, yeah. He'll be one of the top transfers.
Yeah. It surprised me a little because I just thought the numbers wise, like, I don't know what more you could do. And his next team's going to be really interesting because another guy that put up such good numbers, if you go to play with a bunch of talent, it might not accurately talk about your versatility, but he needs to prove that probably to NBA teams that he can be effective with talent around him. Thought he just looked fine at the combine. Like I kept watching. I was like, I wanted more. So I get it. I could see that there's probably a little bit of a lack of momentum. And if his camp thought he was, hey, we're probably mid 40s on, maybe he's like, I can improve this. So I get it.
I think it's the right decision.
Yeah, I did too.
I was slower on Watkins for most of the year. Athleticism, the rim pressure stuff, the numbers were really good for most of the season. I never really was moved by the shot. It never felt that real for me. And then I thought the defense was a lot worse than it should have been. He just felt really inconsistent on that end. And just like he didn't care, I guess, on that end. Based on his play, I don't have any intel on that or whatever. But it just, there were so many lapses every single game where it's like, man, like, you are way too good to be letting that happen. So I think this is really the best move for him. I'm fascinated to see where he goes and how they kind of reignite that defense with him. And if the shot improves, if it does, then we're talking about an early second round, late first round guy next year. I know a lot of people had him there or in that kind of range this year. I can never quite get there.
Yeah, I had him in my second pretty comfortably, and there's definitely a world in which he could take another leap and be in that late first round discussion, but I thought it was the right decision. I thought he had a fantastic year when it come to, like, he hit a moment in the season where you're like, are you looking at what Jahmyr's doing right now? Like, he was just cooking, and it wasn't just offensively, it was just everywhere. So he's on radar, and I think everyone's got to remember, this is a big part of the process, is like, if you're even thinking about it, if you're even thinking about getting into the draft, you should be doing this whole process, because now you understand what to expect. Now you're going to get feedback to for everyone to tell you, hey, this is what we would like you to work on. So it's the best asset. That and the G League, I think, are the best assets for the NBA and for these players. So, like, yes, you should always be testing. Even if you're, hey, I'm 99% going back to school. Why not? Go see how you measure up against everybody. So for Jameer, I thought, you know, after a good year and a little bit of buzz, now you're on the radar. Go back, work on some stuff. Scouts will be coming to see what you can do and what you've improved.
Absolutely. Let's take our final ad break and then just run through some of these rapid fire. Okay. Some of the final names on here that really stood out for me. Hunter Salas was a big time surprise for me. I was really cool on him for most of the year, especially after he got bullied by Reese Beekman. Then I just kind of continued doing a deep dive and going through all his stuff from before and after that game, and he grew a ton on me. But probably another one of these guys where he kept getting told the ceiling was 35-ish and just wasn't good enough. So I think that's a big win for Wake Forest, getting him back along with Omaha Ballou. They could have a really fun team next year.
Gosh, I'm rooting so hard for Omaha to have a big offseason. Salas, I think, was my biggest surprise because I don't know much more he can do. Like that is on top of Sears. Like Sears had a year where I'm like, what else do you want to ask him? Salas says, like, what else can he do? Like, he just had a fantastic year. I was a little cooler on him, but I was getting ready for my deep dive, and I was like, I have a weird feeling about this. I'm waiting to see if he's officially in. And you know, in terms of just a holy crap, like, resurrection season for a prospect, he had it. And good size, good offensive skills. The Reese Beekman game sticks in my head too. I mean, Reese Beekman, the warden, basically had some fun with him. But I do, you know, there is a world in which I think Salas could get take another step forward. And because of his size, because of the offensive tools, I get it. And I have a lot of respect for those guys that are like, oh, that's my ceiling. Okay, let me show you. So we'll see. But it was just he just seemed like he had way too much momentum to go back. So it just off of the season. Now, maybe the pre-draft process, he was like, hey, I went to these workouts, I struggled. Like, then I get it. But we'll see. That was the biggest surprise for me.
Another one for me, Peyton Sanford.
Yeah, that was a good one. Fine.
He had a brutal combine, but I know he hurt his shoulder in one of the scrimmages. But even before that, it was a rough time for him to have like his worst shooting outing ever. Which
is a good shooter. Why can't he shoot? No, but I get you.
No, he's a legit shooter.
Yeah. Oh, I know. We underestimate how big those games are for these guys.
Yeah.
Like, you have two games to show your stuff. One bad shooting game. Well, this guy can't shoot. It's like, no, like, come on. We watched the whole year, but that's just how this goes. And if you look really good, you can cook with momentum up boards.
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it was just like, I understood why he went back. Cause I was like, I don't think he had a great process. Like,
yeah. And you know, by all accounts, and I believe his brother's on the team too, you know, by all accounts, he loves Iowa. So, you know, it makes some sense. How does he get better? How does he improve? Could he have a Baylor Shireman facsimile of a year where he just kind of gets stronger? I think that's a must for him, but kind of create a little more for others and not just be an off-ball shooter.
Well, yeah, it's a big box score games this year. Like, he had some high assist games. Like,
and I think he's a good passer, but How does he leverage that into selling himself as more than just an off-ball shooter?
It's going to be the defensive side of the ball, or your fit is going to get really specific. It's going to be like the Sam Hausers, where you're like, hey, you were a deadly sharpshooter, but you didn't get really drafted, and now you have to find a very specific fit and spend some time in the G League, and a team's going to need it. A lot of these guys that returned, my biggest thing was like, hey, there was some questions about the outside shooting in this class already. And then we lost some specialists. Like, we lost some guys that could really light it out. We lost Peyton Sanford. We lost Alex Caraban. We lost guys like that that really, I thought at some point in this draft, like, there's always a range in which teams are like, we need shooting. We can get an elite shooter in the second round. That got thinner. And I'm not just saying those two guys. Like, it just got thinner because there is a lot of questions with some of these guys. There's a lot of unproven shooters. So I think Sanford, I just thought, had an opportunity this year to climb because of need with some of these teams and this draft class. Now you got to add something else to your game if you're going to double down and jump into a class that's going to have firepower. We're starting to see already there's names coming to college basketball next year. Like, it is going to be very fun. So, I think you got to just take another step up with the productivity. You got to prove, because he's got good stuff going for him. But I also think just defensively, you got to kind of put your hard hat on and be like, okay, I got to at least show teams that I'm capable on that side of the ball.
For sure. Someone who is very capable on that side of the ball, Garway Dual, heading back, I think is the right decision. The defense rocks. It's incredible. Love the playmaking. You just have to figure out how to score. And I think college setting is much more conducive for that than trying to do it in the G League or the NBA, or just on the bench. So he needs reps. He needs to figure out how to score, how to shoot, all that kind of stuff. It will be fascinating to see where he ends up transferring.
I have no idea where I'm rooting for him to go. I have no idea. Clue. I'm excited he's in the portal, but I have no idea where I want him to go. I love him still. I know I will not. I'm very excited. There's just flashes of, oh my gosh, if you ever figure this out. And defensively, the length, he has all the tools you'd want. I want him to gain some weight, obviously, but like, there's just a potential alien there waiting to be unlocked in the backcourt. So it's just, I'm right there with you. Like, he just has to get more offensive consistency. Even if he's raw, if he could just take a step, because there's just flashes where you're like, that is unreal what you just did. And just never saw it this year. But I'm still very, very high on him. I was shocked when it seemed like he was going to stay. I was like, what? Like, yeah. So, and good job testing. Good job testing. Figure it out. Like,
And just like going back to this time last year, we really liked him as a sophomore breakout guy. We kind of always thought he was going to be a minimum of 2 year guy. And that's how this goes. Sometimes it just takes time. Nothing wrong with returning. No such thing as failure. In that sense, another name headed to Kentucky, Jackson Robinson. Again, I think this was a really smart decision by him, going to a Kentucky team that has a ton of defense on it and desperately needs some shooting, going, you know, reuniting with his former coach. I think that's a really, really smart move by him.
Very, very, very smart. I was a little cooler, and then I saw some stuff in the combine, and I was like, okay, I kind of see where people are getting drunk in love. And then I just thought he didn't buzz enough in those games. And I was like, yeah, I would go back. And then when announcement said that he's going back and he's going to Kentucky, I was like, very smart. Yeah. So I need some versatility from him, but freakish tools, good length. I just want to see if you can add a little bit more to your offensive game, but they're going to be kind of pretty fun next year. I feel like they got a little squat going on. So I'm excited to watch that Kentucky team.
Last big name that I had, Coleman Hawkins, kind of surprised me too. I've never been the biggest Coleman Hawkins fan, not my cup of tea, but I know some out there really like him. I think going back was, again, the right decision for him. Another one of these guys who's probably going to get a pretty hefty NIL bag, and it will be very interesting to see where he transfers. My guess would be the SEC somewhere. I think in the past he said that he's not going to go to another Big Ten school. So we'll see.
Yeah. I was never the biggest fan. I feel like some people at No Ceilings poured one out last night when they saw he was going back. I get it. If you like him, I get it. If you don't, welcome. You can stay as long as you want. But yeah, I'd be very interested to see where he goes. He's just so frustrating. Like when he looks good, he looks good. And then the next game, he'll have like 4 points and five rebounds. I'm like, what are we doing here? So I don't know. He's going to go to the G League eventually sometime and like put up good numbers. And then he's going to end up on some team that uses him very smart. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I don't know. Anybody else? I can't talk about Coleman Hawkins that long. That was a world record. I'm sorry. It's not my guy. He's just not my guy.
I think that's all I got. At least, you know, big names. You know, there are some like Rashear Fleming headed back to St. Joe's, really like him long term. I think him and another year of him and Eric Reynolds will be fun. St. Thomas headed back, Will Richard headed back, Ben Humrichus, apologies on pronunciation, headed to Illinois. Yeah. So I think there wasn't really that many decisions where I was like, oh, you, what are you doing? But it was another fascinating deadline, as always.
JT Toppin going back is just fantastic. Very excited about that. Yes. Xavier Lee going back. Yes. Very excited. Those are two games you should be skyrocketing up your breakout list for next year. I mean, the funniest thing is we're going through all this, and I'm like updating my board already for next year of like, okay, they're going back. I mean, we're talking like JT Toppin, Mark Sears, Xavier Lee, Jackson Robinson, Alex Caravan, Nick Clifford, Kwame Evans,
Colin Murray Boyles, like
Hunter Salas, Donovan Dent, Elliot Cadeau,
Malik
Mack. There's a Ryland Griffin. Oof. There's a lot of names next year. It's going to be a juggernaut of a class.
KJ Lewis.
So I'm really excited for that. I also still think, you know, we lost some names that were in my top 60. I think in a lot of top 60s, but I got to a point and I was like, man, there's still good depth. There's still a lot of good names down here. So I'm happy with all the guys that went back. I'm not that shocked. It just was kind of like, oh, okay. But it's smart. If you feel you can improve, you should always go back. You should always work on your game. You don't let age haters drown you out. So I'm excited.
Just, you know, question in the chat just real quick.
Yeah,
to wrap up here. Who are some of the names that slid up in for like on your big board? For me personally, so kind of with the withdrawals plus their combine performances, Cam Christie, Baylor Sharman, Enrique Freeman were a couple of the biggest winners, or movers for me. AJ Mitchell slid up, Keisha Johnson, Isaiah Crawford, London Johnson, Melvin Ajinka. Those are guys kind of more towards the back end of top 60.
I'm right there with you with Enrique.
The highest guy that withdrew was Nick Clifford for me at 28. So, you know, that moved up McCullough and Tyson and Antonio Reeves just a little bit and kind of thinned out that late first, early second tier for me quite a bit.
Yeah. Right there with you. I had Clifford like early second. Some guys moved up. I've moved up Shireman, Juricic, KJ Simpson. But yeah, Christie for me and Enrique Freeman were two of the biggest ones. I need to Jalen Wells also creeping up. Hook Porty to make Metcalf happy.
Proud of you.
And then I need to about to do a dive on Isaiah Crawford, but I've liked the initial stuff. So there's just a lot of guys creeping up. Like I've had, you know, we're sickos at No Ceilings. I feel like, you know, Steven's got a top 200 because you're a maniac. Like, I don't know how he does. He's like, oh, that's that guy. I like him. He's 187th on my board. So I mean, this is the time of the year where you start moving some names. Metcalf has the best freeze frame of all time right now. This is fantastic. All right, I'll answer some questions and we'll cut this out. Devin Carter's moving up for sure. That's going to be the thumbnail 100%. Appreciate you guys all in the chat. I'm going to close this bad one out. So thank you guys for joining us. We really appreciate it. Be on the look next week. Here's some updates. Here's for everyone. Yes, that'll be the thumbnail. Here's for everyone. We've got a big board coming next week. We've got a mock draft coming next week. And then we have a very special announcement for all the draft maniacs out there. Keep on the lookout for that. We'll be announcing it on social media. But thank you. If you enjoyed this, please give us a review. Help us out. Like us on YouTube. All that good fun stuff. My name is Tyler Rucker. Check out the No Ceilings podcast 5 times a week. New episodes. We'll have a ton of content coming out on the site, noceilingsnba.com. And we'll see you guys next time. Take care.